Welcome to Little Atoms on Resonance 104.4 FM, a live talk show about ideas and culture, with an emphasis on ideas of the Enlightenment.
Little Atoms is presented by Neil Denny, Padraig Reedy, Richard Sanderson and Becky Hogg, as well as regular guest presenters.
Little Atoms actively promotes science, freedom of expression, scepticism and secular humanism.
Our guests bring ideas that are challenging, sometimes controversial, often polemical, but always interesting.
Good evening, I'm Neil Denny and you're listening to Little Atoms. On this week's show, QI's Director of Research, John Mitchinson, returns to Little Atoms to talk about Unbound, his exciting new crowd-funded publishing venture. Joining John is Keith Carn-Harris. Keith is a sociologist, a researcher, a writer and a music critic. He is also an honorary research fellow at Birkbeck College, an associate lecturer for the Open University and the convener of New Jewish Thought. Keith's book, The Best Water Skier in Luxembourg, Tales of Big Fishes in Small Ponds, is vying to be one of the first Unbound publications. John and Keith, welcome to Little Atoms, both. Or should I say welcome back, John, and welcome, Keith.
Nice to be here.
Very nice to be back.
So, John, first of all, before we get into talking about Unbound, let's talk about you do have a background in the publishing industry, so let's talk about that a little bit first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously for the last 10 years I've been pretty preoccupied with QI, which I continue to be and love. But before that, it's true, before I was in publishing, I was in bookselling. I was very early days of Waterstones. I ended up becoming the first marketing director when Tim Waterstone was there, which was all very exciting because that was sort of late 80s. We did feel like we were changing the face of British retail because we were opening really good bookshops on high streets all over the UK. And then I did that for, I guess, about 6 years and then made the move into publishing in the mid-90s with another extraordinary man called Christopher McElhose. We bought out a bit of the HarperCollins empire called the Harville Press, which was a very, very high-end literary publishing house specialised in literature and translations, but had amazing backlist from Pasternak and Solzhenitsyn and Mikhail Bulgakov to modern writers like Richard Ford, the American writer Raymond Carver, Peter Matheson, Jonathan Rabin. I mean, it was great fun. And again, I think the time was right for that sort of small, independent, standalone. I was at Harville for about 4.5 years, and then I think Christopher and I decided we had slightly different views about the future of that business. And very amicably, I then went off. I'd been offered a job in Orion, which at that stage was about the fifth largest publishing house. I went there as group marketing director, which was fun, but I decided what I'd really liked was to sort of do something different. And we were at that stage in the process of acquiring a large illustrated reference company called Castle, and I volunteered to go and run that as managing director, and I ran that for 3.5 years, which was losing a lot of money. It published way too many books, and it was a lot of work, but we had great fun sort of turning that around. I ended up publishing The Beatles, their anthology book. I published Michael Palin. We turned Trini and Susanna's column on, you know, what to wear from the Telegraph into a book, which, you know, then was followed by TV and became a huge bestseller. And I even published a book about knitting with dog hair by an American woman, which was an unexpected bestseller, but as well as Brewer's Phrase and Fable and a lot of interesting reference books, which we commissioned, which was where it kind of dovetailed in what I did with QI. So an interesting, I have been, I think, fairly uniquely a fairly important kind of bookseller and publisher and, I guess, an author as well. So gamekeeper turned poacher turned game.
So we should probably establish, first of all, what's different about Unbound compared to... Because I'd like to sort of talk about why you've decided to go down the Unbound route rather than just do what you've done in the past. So
sure.
What's different about Unbound?
Well, what's different about it is... I mean, almost everything's different about it. It starts from a different place. I mean, one of the things I always said is I'd never go back into publishing. Because publishing is, you know, although there are lots of brilliant people in it, it is a very... It can be very dispiriting. You know, the market has changed dramatically. You know, the retailers, I think, have been in a fairly dominant position. Amazon in particular, in the UK, you know, Smith's, Waterstones, supermarkets. That doesn't mean there isn't good publishing. It's just that the model that publishing is based on, which is, you know, you give the author an advance, you print the books go out into the bookshops and they're either bought or not bought, and then you get them back if they're not bought and you have to credit the retailer in full. It just means nobody at the moment is making a lot of money. And what I've characterised before, I guess, is there's a sort of lot of bad karma that surrounds it. You know, lots of, you know, authors get lots of rejection letters. publishers. Agents and publishers can't ever be quite honest with one another. You know, remainder bookshops, you know, a quarter of all the books that are published each year are pulped. Yeah, it's great if you get a bestseller, but most of the authors are living in this sort of really difficult state where the average earnings is apparently £16,000 a year, but you take the top 10% out of that, it drops to £4,000. So it just seemed that there needed to be a different model. And for years, you know, with digital publishing and the advent of social media, just suddenly thought, well, maybe there are different ways of going about the funding, distribution and marketing of books. So Unbound is, I think, one of the first genuinely new models. And like all genuinely new things, it has its roots firmly in the past. If you go back into the 18th century, one of the ways that books were written was that an author would have an idea and then gather subscriptions in advance. So, you know, Dr. Johnson famously did this for his dictionary. So the idea is you pitch an idea, and on the Unbound site, now with the internet, you can pitch an idea to potentially millions of people simultaneously. If people like the idea of what you want to write, they will subscribe to it, i.e. give you money. And there are a number of different ways they can give you money, from paying for a simple digital edition up to, in some cases, having lunch with the author. Or in the case of Keith, they can even come with the author on a trip for a large sum of money and be in the book. So two things about it. One is you get your name in the back of the book as a patron. So it's a sort of micro-patronage scheme. I mean, what it's called is crowdfunding. And there are a number of particularly American sites that have done very well with crowdfunding, all kinds of kind of cultural activities. But we are the first dedicated UK crowdfunding site for books. You know, so far, so good. We're having a great time doing it. And two of the books already have been funded, and another sort of half a dozen, I think, are well on their way.
We'll talk a little bit more a bit later about how that process actually works. I want to bring Keith in to talk about why he's decided to go with Unbound. But just before we do that, you mentioned the idea of a subscription service. People are sort of signing up to pay for the book in advance. What happens then? Once the book is published, once it's finished and you have a pile of books, does it then become the same as an ordinary book? Is it going to be in shops? I mean, do you have a sort of distribution with...
What we do is we have two routes to market. One is the Unbound edition, which is the first edition, where we get as many people, obviously, to subscribe. And I should say it's a 50-50 profit share with the author. That's the basis on which we work. And, you know, that's dramatically better than the 10% royalty that you are allegedly getting through most traditional publishers. So there's the Unbound edition, which obviously we sell all of. And then we do have an arrangement with Faber and Faber to publish a trade edition into the trade, which would appear in all the other places in the trade as well. So we're able to offer authors not only a direct relationship with their readers through our site, you know, and each author on the site has got what we call the author's shed, where they can hang out and put early draft chapters and run a forum, and maybe, you know, one of the things we're looking at doing is having, you know, sort of Skype kind of online interviews with the author, that kind of thing. But they also then get the possibility, if there is a genuine sort of potential for a trade sale, and I think most of our books will end up in a trade edition and being distributed, as they say, through the usual channels. But it's just what's curious about it is the way it's funded, and the fact that you're building already for each book that an author does through us, they're building a set of direct relationships with readers, which is something that publishing has been particularly bad at doing, because all publishing really does is feed the retail, the booksellers. They haven't developed, I mean, some of the smaller ones, the Canongates, Faber, who published the QI books, I think Profile, Atlantic, some of those smaller presses have been very good at developing more direct relationships with customers. But to some extent, that relationship is always has the feel of slightly of house arrest about it, because, you know, they are completely, in the end, determined, their success or failure is determined by the support they get from the major retailers. We are bypassing, for the most part, the major retailers. So that's the main difference, I guess.
Keith, I want to bring in your book is called The Best Water Skier in Luxembourg, Tales of Big Fish in Small Ponds. Before we actually talk about the book, let's talk about why you decided to go down the Unbound route. You've been published before, yeah?
I have been published before. I'm actually an academic by professionals, albeit of the peripatetic variety. And I've had two books, academic books, published, both with very good academic publishers that have maximised the trade market, so they've been reasonably priced and paperback. But still, there is a limit of the sort of impact that you can have with an academic book. And for quite a number of years now, my ambition has been to move into non-fiction trade writing. And really, the way that I got involved with Unbound is Well, the big story is it's almost there's no story at all. I had the idea in April, and I wrote it down on one side of A4, and I sent it to John, who I didn't know. We had a vague contact in common, but I don't think that's why they picked it up. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and they picked it up. And then after that, everything happened extremely fast. The reason why I chose it is because although I do have an agent, I didn't really have any confidence that a book of the sort that I wanted to write by me was going to get picked up anywhere. Because the fact is, if you are an academic who has published academic books, it's like a curse in the trade publishing world. They want, unless you've been on TV, they want you to kind of live down your academic writing, because actually for some fairly reasonable reasons, they want you to know that you can write in a non-highfalutin way. So I thought it was very unlikely that my book was ever going to get picked up. So I submitted it to Unbound simply because I didn't necessarily have any better options. And I was quite astounded when they picked it up.
How do you expect the experience to be how different do you expect it to be from your existing publishing experiences?
Well, it already is very different. I mean, one aspect of it is the speed, because Unbound didn't need me to write several sample chapters, which in a book like mine, which is based on research and travel, would have been very, very difficult anyway. They didn't need me to prove myself necessarily. All they needed me to do was to be willing and able to go out there and push the book for all I'm worth. And so that meant that it was a very quick and really pretty trouble-free process. But of course, Unbound can only do so much. They put the books, you put your pitch on the site, and whilst they have helped quite considerably with publicity, to some extent it's the author's job to get out there and sell that book, which is something I've been perfectly happy to do.
So let's talk about what the book is about. Where did the idea come from?
The phrase, the best water skier in Luxembourg, was a kind of self-deprecating joke that I used to make, because I'm a world acknowledged expert in two tiny areas of research. One is the sociological study of the Anglo-Jewish community, of which there are probably about four or five others. And the other is the sociological study of heavy metal, of which there are more than four or five others, but still not a lot. So I used to joke saying, well, I've reached the top in my chosen profession, but only to the extent that I'm the best water skier in Luxembourg. I sometimes used to vary it. I sometimes used to say that I'm actually the best table tennis player in Latvia. And it just came to me last April. I have no idea where it came from. The idea, well, why don't I actually try and meet the best water skier in Luxembourg? And then the idea of a book based on it just came tumbling out. The idea of looking at big fish in small ponds throughout the world. So I came up very quickly with some other ideas. The top bassoonist in Finland, the top novelist in Suriname, the most powerful politician in St. Helena, and various others like the Icelandic Special Forces. And I realised that it was both a book that had a kind of very populist, easily understandable title, but it also drew on some much more serious themes that I've been exploring throughout my career, which is that I'm very, very interested in small worlds. I'm interested in communities. I'm interested in expertise and excellence. And so the book is intended to explore some quite serious sociological questions, but in a quite light-hearted sort of way. Yeah, and that's the book I want to write. And at the moment, it looks like I may well get a chance to write it.
So what is the attraction of those small worlds? Let's talk about what do you mean by the big fish in the small pond in the title?
Well, to some extent, the big fish in small ponds, I can empathise with them because, in a way, I am one. I'm a very involved member of the UK Jewish community, of which there are less than 300,000 UK Jews. I'm also into heavy metal, and there are more heavy metalists in this country than there are Jews, but I've always been interested in small, obscure heavy metal scenes. I did part of my PhD research on the Israeli metal scene, for example. So I'm very drawn to these small worlds, but there's also a polemical aspect to it as well, in the sense that it's an antidote to worshipping celebrity and power and big fish in big ponds. And I think that big fish in small ponds should be treated like the heroes they are. I mean, it's quite incredible what people devote their lives to doing. And often people are teased for it. You know, like, to take example plucked from the air, English Civil War reenactments, right? And people tease people who do that because, yes, it does seem slightly ridiculous. But I love the way that people will devote their lives to developing expertise on 17th century English Civil War uniforms, because it makes life meaningful, it makes life wonderful, it makes life magical. And I think that a book to celebrate that is perhaps not totally novel, but certainly necessary.
Looking at the sociological aspect, you're looking at groups of people that are into small concerns that are disparate, but do you expect to find similarities between the people? Do you think there's almost like a type of person that is going to be drawn to being interested in that sort of small thing?
I expect there definitely to be some common themes throughout the book, one of which is slightly negative, is that in small worlds there are generally factions. And I've already discovered in the little bit of research I've done on the best water skier in Luxembourg that there are indeed some factions within the Luxembourg water skiing community. Over time there have been a lot of rows and there have been a lot of splits and there's been a lot of acrimony. And the few people I've talked to in the Luxembourg water skiing world are slightly reticent to talk about it, but what I've said to them is, look, you don't have to be ashamed about it, this is just the world. This is the world in all its frustratingness and wonderfulness. So I expect to find that as one thing. But I also expect to find stories of people who have battled incredible adversity to devote their lives to a particular hobby or community without very much reward at all. So if you're a novelist in Suriname writing in the local Surinamese Creole, your chances of making a living, your chances of becoming globally known are very, very small. But yet people still do that. People still do extraordinary things with very little hope of reward. And I think that that's something that I expect to find in all the cases that I look at.
So bringing you back in, John, let's talk a little bit about how the Unbound process works, with, you know, particular reference to Keeve's book. Let's talk about how it's, you know, how he's going to be I suppose, researching it, and, you know, let's talk about the process of raising the money and how will this work?
Well, we took a very, I guess, pretty novel approach with Keith's project, and it's true, he sent in a proposal, and I read it, and I just immediately liked it. And then we met, and Keith showed me, put me onto his blog, which was one of the funniest things I'd read in a very long time. It was about particular kinds of hybrid metal music, one of which still makes me laugh every time I think of it, which is that there's a sort of a very small Venn diagram, which people who are interested in horticulture and people who are interested in heavy metal, and there is a website called Fight Club, that's spelled P-H-Y-T-E, for that particular, and it just and some brilliant sort of black metal vegan chef who delivers his recipes kind of as songs. And I just suddenly thought, this is, I guess, what we would say in QI, you know, Keith has got some kind of interesting worldview. He kind of spots the stuff that I anyway find amusing, and I think if more than two people find it amusing, it's likely that many more people will find it amusing. So the idea was, we were going to fund this, you know, to try and fund all those journeys at once was probably a bit was going to be, so I, you know, we decided that we would fund the first chapter, the Luxembourg chapter, as a sort of a test. And what we came up with, mostly Keith, I have to say, one of the things we try and do is sort of about engagement. It's trying to get the relationship, I suppose, between reader and writer closer, and that readers at the moment don't really have much choice in the commissioning process. They have the choice to buy or not buy books, but you know, it always seems to me that given what we have now is the ability to contact simultaneously lots of people, why don't we get, instead of putting authors through all the pain of having to pitch to an agent and then getting the agent to pitch to a publisher and accumulating, as I said before, all this bad karma, why don't we just put the thing up and see what people think? And so the idea is that you have a set of, I think, about 10 levels on your book, eight levels, of which the first one is just get an electronic copy of the chapter for £3. For £8, you can get a postcard from Luxembourg from Keith. Then you can get the next level up, you can get a souvenir. He'll bring back a souvenir from Luxembourg. And Keith, you finish off the rest of the levels, because
I don't remember the exact prices, but one of them, I think for £25, you get a special heavy metal style Luxembourg water skiing t-shirt, which is currently being designed. Not by me, I should say.
Oh, my favourite one is you get there's a level where you can get a signed photograph of the best water skier in Luxembourg. Or if he or she is not prepared to do that, you'd maybe get the second best water skier in Luxembourg, which is probably cooler anyway. And it goes all the way up to, there's one brilliant level where you'll come to someone's house, give a slideshow, prepare Luxembourgish
specialties
yeah. and give a lecture about your trip. Or beyond that even, is a £1,500 level where you can go with Keith to Luxembourg and be in the book.
But the astonishing thing, the thing that has made my jaw hit the floor repeatedly, is that people have actually signed up to these levels, including my own father, who's signed up for the water skiing T-shirt. So that has genuinely surprised me.
And we are trembling. We're just 59% funded at the moment for the first. I mean, we're very open. We're trying to raise a little over £2,000 to send Keith, and we've made a video which is on the website. So it's all very transparent again, which is something I think that isn't always the case with publishing.
And how much longer have we got?
I think we've got about another
3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, we're pretty confident now. We're on the downward slope, but
I think it works. I mean, it's quite interesting how the funding thing works. It tends to go in fits and starts. Yeah. So some days I do check the website fairly obsessively to see who's actually bought it or who hasn't. And some days there'll be several people will suddenly put in large sums of money, and some days there'll be nothing. So it's partly due to whether I might have written an article online about it or appeared on a podcast or something like that. I mean, but it's nerve-wracking, but also extremely exciting.
I mean, this is pretty novel as well. I mean, we all slightly spend our lives watching the Amazon, 100, but most writers obviously are not in the Amazon 100, and it's pretty dispiriting to go on there and to notice that your book has moved up from, 50,003rd best-selling book on Amazon to 50,002nd best-selling book on Amazon. But the nice thing about this is, literally, if you put in a bit of effort, a bit of concentrated, and you do a bit of tweeting, and you do something on the Facebook page, or there's a bit of a blog, you do notice immediately, you can see that the order's coming through. So there's a very, for writers, I think, there's quite a nice sense of that they can see people actually being interested in what they're doing.
I think it's great to actually see the names of people who are interested, because I think for a writer, whether it's me or somebody else, I think it's important to be reminded continually that however much you think you're writing for yourself, actually you're not. If you're publishing, you're trying to create a connection with the reader. And I think that means that processes such as appearing on podcasts or writing blogs and stuff like that shouldn't be seen as sort of pesky things that get in the way of the actual work, but should be seen as part of the actual work itself, because it's part of, I mean, ultimately it's about communication, and however you do it, whether it's in a book or whether you're appearing on a podcast, it should still be to the same end. So I think that's a very useful thing for writers to be reminded of, although I have to say that there are clearly, it wouldn't work for all books and it wouldn't work for all writers. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong for wanting to be a writer who disappears into their shed for a year and comes out with a sort of perfectly crafted piece of work.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that's part of the thing that we're, it's a journey, obviously, for us as well. We don't know, nobody's done this before. So we're already beginning to find the stuff that works. In general, it works better if you do, I think, in many ways, Keith's project is a sort of an exemplary one for us, because it's very clearly his project. He's very clearly constructed thoughtfully all the different levels, and people, there's a wonderful sort of direct appeal about it. Send me to Luxembourg and I'll come back with something interesting that you can read. And it's true that there will be different sort of ways of doing this for different writers. It's a slightly different thing if it's a novel that hasn't been written, but we opened one of the things we are, I guess, traditional publishing has been, here's an advance, we take the book and we publish the book. And the idea that, you just sit back and do nothing under that, anybody who's been published knows that you end up doing masses of stuff in order to sell your own book. But you don't get rewarded for it particularly. You've already been rewarded because you've got your advance. Now, that's great if your book sells well. But, if you're a new writer, the average sale of a new writer's work in the UK, first edition, is 400 copies through the traditional model. So when people go on our site and say, well, you've only got, the target's only 400. You say, well, yeah, The target's only 400, but A, the author is guaranteed that they'll get the book. They'll also have the connection with 400 writers. And then once the book's there, there's nothing to stop it. We're creating, between us, authors and Unbound together, we're trying to create a sense of awareness, which will probably be higher than were you going through a traditional publishing house where you were in with a lot of other authors. I mean, one of the problems is that there are so many books published each year. It's difficult to get yours kind of up above the parapet so that people know that it's there at all.
I mean, I feel that, there's a possibility that my book won't get fully funded. I think this chapter probably will be. The rest of the book, well, we'll see. But one of the great things about it is that it feels that whatever the outcome, whether it's a book comes out or it doesn't come out, the process has been fun. And one of the problems with the existing publishing model, because I am currently working with an agent on trying to put together a memoir, which wouldn't be right for the Unbound model. Now, if that memoir doesn't end up getting published, then I'll have put in a hell of a lot of work for nothing. Whereas if this doesn't get published, then I'll have had a good time, met a lot of interesting people, and, you know, chalk it up to experience. So in that respect, it's not there isn't as much wasted. I mean, if you think of in the publishing industry generally, the ratio of published books to effort is massively disproportionate. A lot of people put in a huge amount of unpaid time with very little to show for it at the end. With Unbound, I think there is more of a reward whether or not you're successful.
One of the things that we're doing, we had a very successful event 3 weeks ago in Notting Hill as first of our Unbound Live events. It sounds mad because we were supposed to be online and digital, but actually what was brilliant about it was a bit like a sales conference for the public. We had 10 authors all doing short pitches, including Keith, who was brilliant. And everybody there had a great time because it was, on one level, it was people entertaining you, doing different things. We had a novelist who's also a trapeze artist who kind of started the show, and we ended up with a band. And in between, we had comedy, we had some serious stuff, we had fiction, non-fiction, we had, you know, photography. It was, and what was interesting was that we also grafted onto that a sort of a game mechanic, I guess you'd call it, where everybody got to pledge money against the project. So they had a very simple ballot paper, and they could pledge money against them. And we raised several £1,000. Everybody had a great time. It was filmed by Channel 4 News, and also filmed by Imagine, Alan Yentob's programme. He's doing a big thing on the future of the book, which will come out, I think, in late November. But he wanted a positive story on the future of the book to end with, and I think he chose us because actually it was a tremendously jolly evening. It was a sellout, and we now got a lot of interest. I mean, I think we will be doing, I hate to tell you this, Keith, but we will be doing more of those probably quite soon.
Well, we're pretty much running out of time, but I mean, you've raised the idea of the future of the book. We're often told that, you know, the publishing industry itself is in quite a parlous state, and I'd perhaps like to talk about whether or not you set up Unbound in the first place with that in mind. I mean, what do you think in terms of the future? I mean, do you think this model is possibly going to become more common?
Well, I think there is going to be change, because I think the existing model really is so wasteful and difficult. What's sort of difficult about it is that there's, everywhere you go, every small town now has a literary festival. There are 80,000 reading groups out there. Everywhere you look, you can see there's probably more thirst for ideas. As you know, the traditional media, the television, it gets sort of fuller of, people are looking for connection with creative endeavour. They're looking for ideas, they're looking for stories, and somehow engaging them in ways. I mean, we're not just making this playful because we think that that's, you know, that's different. We're doing it because actually we think that that's how it should be. That's a much better model of engagement. If you can involve readers in helping them feel that I saw Keith perform, I think his idea's great, here's a tenor to help it, to make it happen, is rather different from going on online and simply buying a discounted hardback on Amazon. So, I mean, I think there is no real danger to the future of the book. I think that books, obviously digitally, books are becoming, you know, it is changing. But is there a way that people can make money out of it? I think, of course there is. We just have to be creative.
In reference to that, what sort of reactions have you had from the rest of the publishing industry?
I mean, fine, really. I mean, we haven't been particularly. We were at a conference recently of traditional publishers. We were declared as not the future, officially not the future. And I was like that Yogi, the great American sports coach, Yogi Berra, who said, you know, it's tough to make predictions, especially about the future. But I feel that, all, you know, given that we've been going 3.5 months, to be already declared not the future is probably a rather a good sign. But in general, you know, the people, I've got a lot of friends in publishing. And they're probably slightly annoyed. I keep pointing out how wasteful and difficult their industry is. But behind the scenes, most of them are also saying, well, yeah, whether our model is the right model is a different one. But I think change, you know, there is just a lot of fear out there.
So, well, we're out of time. So I'll give the last word to Keith and tell us again the title of the book and where people can find it and contribute.
Thank you for the plug. It's The Best Water Skier in Luxembourg, Tales of Big Fish in Small Pond. You can find it at unbound.co.uk, together with some other great projects that I hope get funded.
So, John and Keith, thanks for speaking to Little Atoms today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Before we end this week's show, I'd just like to make a quick announcement. This autumn, there is a series of cultural events at the Bishopsgate Institute in London under the theme of Whose Mind Is It Anyway? And Little Atoms has curated a number of events. The first one is called What's Behind the Built Environment and is on the evening of Thursday, the 13th of October at 7:30 p.m. And we'll be looking at how the built environment is designed to influence our behaviour and such things. I'll be chairing the event, and speakers include the author and journalist Anna Minton, Professor Alan Penn of the UCL Bartlett Facility of the Built Environment, and one of our most regular previous guests on Little Atoms, Jonathan Meads. The tickets cost £8, concession £6, and can be purchased from the Bishopsgate Institute's website, which is bishopsgate.org.uk. We hope to see some of you there.
You've been listening to Little Atoms. You can find details of upcoming guests at our website, littleatoms.com. The Little Atoms podcast is available on iTunes. Thanks for listening.